Welcome to the React Show, brought to you from Occupied Miwok territory by me, your host Thomas, and a change in weather. What is it like to bootstrap a software as a service company? How do you stay motivated as a single founder? When is your product actually ready to launch? Today, our guest will answer these questions and more as we discuss their current and previous startups and what that experience is really like. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm super excited for our guest, and I know it will be a ton of fun. And now, senior front-end engineer at GitLab and founder of StormKit, Savash Vadova. Welcome to the React Show, Savash.
Hello, everyone. This is super exciting to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm super excited to have you. I've really enjoyed learning more about StormKit and talking with you. And we were talking a little bit before the show about how we sort of got into programming. And I was like, oh, yeah, I had dial-up. And I had this, made websites on this thing called GeoCities. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, well, that was my first website. It's a nice coincidence, like we were talking before the show. And that was my first website. It's when I was, I think, 12 years old. I and my friend from the school, we were interested in programming. And he showed me the website that he did. And then I wanted to do the same, so I just put something together. I remember the cloudy background that I put, and then there was the sun, and then I put my name on it, and that was my first website.
Oh, that's awesome. How did you write it in your first version? Like, what program did you use to write the HTML?
That's a great question. That was 20 years ago. So as far as I remember, there was an app called FrontPage, and I think it was Microsoft. So I was using FrontPage to prepare the websites. So
I don't think I ever actually, I don't know if I ever used FrontPage. I actually just was using Notepad. I just type it out. I totally did the same thing. I was 12 years old, so that's really funny.
I use Notepad as well, but that was my upgrade. Like, first I started with FrontPage because I think it was visual. So it was kind right? So that's the first, that was the first website I did. And then I used Notepad, and then we came today, and today I'm using VS Code.
Oh, today you're using VS Code. What do you think I'm using today?
Vim?
Oh, pretty close. I use Emacs.
Okay.
Yeah. I've talked on the podcast plenty about VS Code, so we won't get into it now, but I am curious, StormKit, we'll get into what that is in a little bit, but FrontPage is a long ways away from VS Code and where you are today. So did you just I love doing this? Like, how did that journey go? How did you get into like more heavy programming, I guess?
So I got into programming thanks to my brother. Back at the time, he was also doing programming, and he was working for a bank. And I think it was 2002 or something like that, and then he showed me the authentication system he built. Like, when you log into your bank, you put in your credentials, and then he showed me the SMS that arrived to his phone, and that was pretty revolutionary for me. It was like magic. So
that's awesome. Yeah,
I said the same. Like, oh, that's awesome. I want to do this as well. And then that's I started programming. Then I continued doing some websites for the games that I was playing, so like clans and stuff, just for fun. And I think when I was 18 years old, I was studying political science, by the way. I'm not a computer science graduate. I graduated from political science. I did my first startup. I was living in Istanbul by then, and the startup was basically a website which allowed you to order food from your closest grocery And that was pretty new. There was a similar website which allowed you to order food, like the delivery.
The delivery.
And so that went actually pretty well. So we partnered up with a company. Then we did the development for 2 years. We were serving whole Istanbul almost. So we had more than 100 groceries. And
wow, that's huge.
Yeah, that was pretty. And I was only 18 with a friend of mine. Then a company joined us. After 2 years, we quit it because it like the marketing side didn't work well. And then it was frustrating. I almost dropped out of the college. And so I didn't want to do that. So I quit. But the thing is, after a couple of years, a startup like that emerged in Istanbul. It's called Getir. And now I think it's one of the first unicorns in Turkey. So essentially, they're doing the same thing. It was wrong time.
How do you feel about that?
A lot of people ask me this. I think I feel I still feel great because this is a journey. I mean, like when you do something like this, you acknowledge that there is a chance to fail, right? And what I like to see is that since this is a journey, it teaches me a lot, and I think it helped me to come where I am today, and I'm a happy person, so I never see it as a failure.
That's I remember recently in like a sort of interview type thing for some work, somebody asked me about like my failures, and you know, it's one of those things people always ask you, but I'm always like, I just don't frame things as failures. You know, it's like, I learned a lot. Like, how is that a failure? You know?
Exactly.
It's, yeah.
This journey teaches you a lot, and it helps you to become even a better person. So it's never a failure.
Yeah. So I guess like sort of moving forward then, now your big project is StormKit, right?
Yes.
So what is, like, real quickly for people that might not know, what is StormKit, and also why should somebody use it?
Yeah, that's a pretty good question. So StormKit is a platform as a service. It allows you JavaScript developers to deploy their applications into the cloud. So it's very similar to Vercel and Netlify, and actually, StormKit launched right when Vercel was still now by then, and it was they were still doing deployments, but in a server environment. They were using servers, so we kind of launched at the same time, and it's been 4 years already, or more than 4 years, I think 5 years.
Wow,
almost.
That's a lot.
Yeah,
it's a lot. So you went from delivering groceries, and then you're like, what would be the next step up? Let me deliver websites. Exactly. Is that how it went?
Exactly. No, the idea came, like, I was working for a company in Switzerland, and it's basically an e-commerce website, like eBay, eBay version of Switzerland. Let's put it that way. And we were, at that time, we were using React, and we wanted to do server-side rendering. And I remember we spent a few months, because it was still a new technology, and we spent a few months to understand how it works, to see the challenges. And I remember saying to myself, like, there should be a service which does this for us. Like, not every company has the time to spend this much energy to put it this much energy to do server-side rendering, and that's actually how I came up with this with the idea. So I wanted to do an on-demand server, like pre-rendering a pre-rendering service. So that's how StormKit started. But I mean, it's evolved into a platform as a service.
Yeah, interesting. So I can at least say, you know, StormKit now, it's interesting to look at because It feels like something I have done like 100 times at this point, like setting up a GitHub Action pipeline or on GitLab or whatever, you know, like I love having it set up so somebody creates a PR, it deploys the version so I can check it out, or other, you know, like that whole thing. And so, yeah, it's like totally makes sense to me. I see this, I'm like, oh yeah, this makes a lot of sense, you know.
It facilitates a lot. I mean, you don't have to go through this the setup process. So if you're building a startup, for instance, yeah, you want to
exactly. You want it's to a do, lot of work to do exactly. on your own. Yeah,
exactly.
So who do you see as somebody that would use StormKit? Like, what do you imagine?
So it's since we are targeting JavaScript applications. I imagine front-end engineers would use this. Like that was yeah. my first thought because I was also doing front-end engineering in my previous company. And not every front-end engineer likes to deal with infrastructure, setting up pipelines.
Kidding me. Every front-end engineer I've ever met, it's like all they dream of. They're like, oh my God, I wish I could spend all day configuring Docker. And
yeah, exactly. So this is the target. But going to be quite transparent, we're also having our challenges because it's a crowded market, right? There are already big players like Vercel and Netlify. As far as I know, they both received a lot of funding. They have the bigger teams. So if an enterprise, for instance, wants to host their website, because they usually tend to go to companies that have more funding, bigger teams that can deliver SLAs. And this has been a challenge for us. For a long time, it was a one-man show, StormKit. So it's hard to convince these players, right? So I was always struggling with finding the right customer target.
Yeah.
On the other side, there are also indie hackers who would like to host their websites or their apps. But they're usually looking for a free version. So you have the two edges. One edge looks for a more sophisticated company because they want to trust. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, there are indie hackers that usually want to host their websites for free. So and if you're bootstrapped, you don't have the resources to do this for a long time. That's actually why we recently switched to free trial, because we were not able to host these websites for free anymore.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I guess what I want to understand this, like why would I use StormKit and not Netlify or Vercel? Like, what is the type of person that would find StormKit more appealing than, say, the alternatives or setting it up themselves? Like, I have often used. Are you familiar with CapRover?
Nope.
It's basically like a self-hosted platform as a service, like self-hosted Heroku. So I've often used that, but I'm like, I write all these scripts to do the thing that StormKit already does to run on there, you know? So, you know, am I a good candidate? I'm just wondering who, if somebody's listening to this, you know, how do they know if they should go check it out?
So, this has been the biggest challenge for us so far. But recently, since a few months, we started to deliver a different message. We are a bootstrap company. We're two people behind this. This at first may look like a disadvantage against bigger companies, but on the other side, being smaller and being independent means that you're more flexible. So recently, for instance, we started to receive more customized requests. Like, for instance, one customer wants to do self-hosting and the alternatives doesn't provide that. So we are going in that direction because it was also in our mind to deliver a self-hosted version of StormKit. So when we found the customer, we were super excited. Or, for instance, there was another customer who wanted to have longer serverless execution times. And again, this, like, usually it's not provided within the package by the alternative. So if users have customized demands, we're good to satisfy them as long as it also matches with our roadmap. So this is our biggest biggest selling point, I would say. And we're also seeing a good return for this. And being flexible, companies usually tend to give up their requirements like SLAs and other enterprise solutions. So because they know that they have a good support, because we're always communicating with them, we're always in touch with them. So they start to trust us, and it's a closer relationship. Let's put it that way, and we deliver features that they want. So
yeah,
it's kind of if you want to customize a bit, or if you have a requirement that the other providers do not provide, we're good to deliver this. So this is I think the niche that we are trying to go into, and it looks good.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, so I mean, I could speak from experience. I've had features that I wanted on like Vercel, and if you want a feature on Vercel, what do? You file a ticket, and it's probably not going to happen unless, I don't know, it sounds good to their VCs or something, right? You're not actually talking to anyone that has any say on things when they respond to the ticket. What you're saying is, hey, if you're with us, like, hey, you're going to be talking to me, and we want to make it work, and we have the capability and the flexibility because we're small. Does that sound right?
Exactly. That's exactly the point I'm trying to make here. And so far it received pretty good feedback, this approach, and we're trying to shift our marketing strategy towards this direction
Yeah. So right now, are you're just two people? Is that the current state of it, working on it?
Yes, it's
okay. Are you able to? Okay. Yeah. Are you able to speak at all about like the scale that you're currently operating at in terms of like customers? I mean, is it like, 2 or 2,000? To get a ballpark of, you don't have to give any exact things.
No, sure. I think being transparent, I like transparency. This is one of the, it's also like, at GitLab, we have our company values, credit, we call them. And the T stands for transparency. So I'd like to be transparent. And so far we have around 6,000 signups. And lately in the last few years, so this is like a hockey stick. Is that how
got the hockey stick going.
Exactly. So it's getting faster. And we have a few companies that are interested in this using StormKit, one of them is, for instance, a big company with a lot of customers. So it's, we're kind of at this stage.
Yeah. That's awesome. I would say congratulations. Like, that's a lot of work. I know, but it didn't start that way, right? It started at zero customers. So I'm curious, like, how did that go? Like, what, before you launched, what did that look like? Did you set some sort of like timeline? I'm going to build this. I think you said it was more focused on like pre-rendering or something. Yes. You're going to, can you tell me more about like the early days?
It was pretty lonely.
Yeah, totally.
It was pretty lonely. I was developing something that I thought it was cool. By the way, I also had a couple of trials to find co-founders. Didn't went well. Up until a couple of years ago, until my current co-founder John joined, I was mostly the only person staying behind. And when you're a developer, I'm gonna speak on my name, like on my behalf. I don't like to do marketing or sales, and that was my biggest challenge, because I was just developing. I thought I was building something pretty cool, but then finding customers, it was pretty hard. So what I did, I pushed myself out of my comfort zone, and I went to a local meetup in Zurich. That's And then I presented StormKit. And that's actually how I found my first customer. That was almost a year after I started developing StormKit. So I kind of, one can say I waited a bit to go to do marketing. But in the past, I had two startup initiatives, and my learning was that when I keep pushing for some stuff, I just burn out. So this time I said, I'm going to take my time. I'm not going to be in rush because that just puts stress on me. And I like to do something long term. I went kind of on my pace. But until recently, to be honest, we didn't even publish articles. Didn't do quite marketing. So we were just developing features. And that's actually when we started to realize that, okay, we're building something cool, but we need to showcase this. We need to put this on the front page somewhere. So
when you initially started, did you like set some sort of launch date, or like how did that go about? Or was it just you built it and you went to this meetup and somebody was interested and you're like, okay, I guess I'm launched now. Like what was that process like?
I am a bit, so when I develop something, for me, I always have ideas, right, on the tool that I'm developing. So for me, it's never finished. And I always waited. I think it was the same for Michelangelo. When he was crafting David, for him, this never finished. And at the end, his commissioners said, okay, this is pretty cool. Now you should stop. It's the same. I think this is a big challenge for a lot of entrepreneurs. It's never a finished product. So I always waited. Let's wait for this feature and then I'm going to release it. But I realized that this is the wrong approach. You should release. Actually, you should go to the customer even before the feature is there.
Is that what you did for StormKit?
Not at the beginning, but now it is.
Not to be. Okay.
Now it is. Now we're only developing features if there is demand for it. So, for instance, I mentioned self-hosting. That was always on our roadmap, but we never developed it because it requires a lot of effort. But then at the end of the day, if you don't find any customers, it doesn't make any sense. So what we did was we waited, and then a customer came and asked for self-hosted version. So that's when we actually started to developing. So we are at the process of developing a self-hosted version of StormKit.
Okay, well, that's cool. I'm curious about so early on when you were first getting started, were you scared in any sense to sort of get customers and launch it? And I think especially being a more infrastructure type project, even it sounds like initially I would still call that infrastructure, platform type project, right?
It is.
That to me is kind of the next level, because then people are it's not I don't know, a to-do app and maybe it goes down for an hour, okay, whatever, right? But if you're hosting something or somebody's depending on it for their own thing, that's the next level, right? And I think there's and you have to be more sensitive to security and all these things. Were you nervous about all that getting started?
I'm still nervous about it. I'm still nervous about it. It's especially when I was alone. It was always pushing me back. Maybe that's also why I didn't want to do marketing, because what if this thing takes off and I'm not ready for it, and people start to deploy their websites and then it goes down? What happens? I don't want to I'm providing them this service, but on the other side, I'm also responsible for their websites. And as you said, this is not a to-do app. It's a hosting service. So that always pushed me back. But this also had an advantage. We focused a lot on our infrastructure. And when my co-founder, John, joined, we did a lot of improvements. We automized a lot of stuff. Now we have the monitoring systems. We have alerts. For instance, we also put alerts on our customers' website. So if they if something happens, we get notified before they notify us. And we have a lot of backups. We have redundancy. We're feeling much more confident about our service. And so this may sound like something a disadvantage, but we learned from it, and then we turned into an advantage because we prepared the system.
I absolutely agree. I think that's been my experience. Like, I remember when I was launching one of my first SaaS products, and I was so nervous about it going down. Like, I built this like way over complicated like failover system and like all this other stuff that I think in hindsight probably didn't actually, it probably made it less reliable. Like, I was just so nervous about it, you know?
I understand it. Yeah. I've been there.
Yeah. It's like one of those things that like, you don't, it's sort of like this big unknown, but it's so scary and you just don't know how to deal with it. I'm curious at this point if you have any advice for like somebody else starting out, like based on your experience, like what have you learned about how to approach that type of thing?
So in my experience now, I would say that just go for it. Because
yeah,
the more you make mistakes, the more you learn. It's this might sound like a cliche, but it's actually true. I'm pretty happy when new customers came on board and then they found bugs, because
yeah,
it means I'm fixing something for also like for them, but also for some future customers. So it's never gonna be perfect. I mean, even today, for instance, AWS, we have outages of right or. Like other big providers, they also have outages. So it's never gonna be perfect. We just have to go for it and then make sure that it gets better over time.
Have you found if things go wrong, people tend to get upset really easily, or are they pretty accommodating?
I think so far our experience has always been friendly. So if something is wrong, they notified us in the past, and they still do. For instance, they still find some bugs, and we fix them.
Yeah.
But then usually they're very happy about our interest, because we're always there for them. So I think this is what matters. Like at the end of the day, if you're launching a startup, what matters most is okay. Your product needs to be a cool product as well, but the customer service, I think that's one of the most important aspects of startups.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a really great, I don't know, analysis, because it's been my experience too. Like I was initially really scared when I would launch things, because in my head it was like, oh, if this goes down, it's just like the end of the world and, you know, whatever. And then it inevitably happens, something goes wrong, you know, and it's not like people love it, but they were always like, oh, I get it. Yeah. Like that happens. And I think as long as you're like responding in a human way and being like, yeah, we're working on making it better and, you know, type of thing. I found it's not really an issue. maybe I'm just getting lucky, but it sounds like that's kind of your experience as well.
Exactly. Like if today you're a better person or a better product than you were yesterday, I think they like this. This usually has been my experience. And I also noticed that a lot of times we tend to make the problems bigger than they usually look, right? So for instance, today I was late for the show because I was stuck in the traffic. And for me, it was the end of the world. I was like, oh, I'm late. I shouldn't be late. But then when I talked to you, you said it's fine, because I made the early notice to you. I gave you a notice. I told you that I'm going to be late. And I think you liked this, the approach that I told you beforehand. And
absolutely, So. And, you know, it's one of those things that you could probably say applies to the way you run StormKit, but I always schedule a little bit of padding time in because you never know what's going to happen. Sometimes people have technical issues. It's exactly. just how life goes, you know?
Like exactly.
Yeah. So do you have any like actual stories from like the early days when something went wrong or it went down and you were like scrambling or any of that, or just any challenges, I guess? Like,
thinking about it, apart from Little Bucks,
perfect.
We almost never had a big issue. Yeah. I'm perfect, but we never had this experience.
Did you have that experience like, at one of your earlier things, like the grocery delivery or anything where it was like that type of thing where, I don't know, it seemed really challenging?
The challenging part was, so we prepared a pretty good system. I'm pretty proud of myself. Like when I, developed it, I was not doing programming professionally. I was a student. Yeah. I was a political science student. And, because in Istanbul at that time, people were not used to technology that much. They were not used to yeah. receive orders online. We always had to call them like, "Hey, hello, you have an order. Can you please check it out?" And
really? Yeah. Wow. That's like high tech.
this is not scaling up well, right? So I ended up doing was, so we had a spare computer. I opened a tab. I think it was an Internet Explorer. And then there was a script running there, a JavaScript, because I was familiar with JavaScript. I think PHP, and we were doing it in C#. But anyways, I prepared a script which used Skype API by the time, and it kept checking orders. If there was an order that was not being checked for 5 minutes, it used Skype API to call the market automatically, and then there was an automatic message that was played telling them. So this was a big challenge, and this is how we fixed it. It actually worked pretty well.
So it's almost like you might not be able to anticipate what the actual big challenges are, but you know, you handle them when they come up.
Yeah, exactly. Another challenge, I think this is, now that I'm that I thought about it, so with StormKit, things are always, let's put it this way. Sometimes there are also malicious users, right? Especially in the hosting environment. So
Definitely.
Our first experience with this was, so we didn't have any monitoring for capturing these malicious websites. So we were checking them manually. And it also didn't scale up well. We started to receive mails from AWS. So StormKit runs on AWS right now.
Yeah.
And at one point, because we were late to React, they, without letting us know, they blocked our IP. And then our hosting service was, it seemed like it was working. But for some reason, it did not work. So the monitoring system was pretty cool, but with it, but then something did not work, and it took us the whole day to understand that we were blocked for this. And eventually this led us to build actually a phishing bot. John built it. It's pretty cool. Now it goes through all deployments. It checks. So it uses AI. And it checks the website. If it looks like a scammy website, then it notifies us. So that we check it manually. And if it's a phishing website, we just close it down.
Fascinating. Yeah, that makes sense. That does sound like a challenge, though.
It was a challenge, especially finding out that our IP was blocked.
Yeah, that is, man, I bet in those situations. It's so frustrating too. You're like, why couldn't you tell me? But then exactly. I'm sure they're like, no, it's a malicious user. We will like shadow ban them or whatever, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm curious, like you're doing stuff like this, and for a long time you were doing this by yourself. How, like, as basically a solo founder, how did you stay motivated throughout, I imagine, all the ups and downs?
I think that brings me back to my previous answer when I said that I like to go with my pace now. That helps me staying motivated because, let's be honest, I mean, this is a long journey. And if you're a solo founder, you're going to lack the motivation. And I also had those times. So for instance, for a couple of months, I never touched a single line of code unless there was a request from the users. It just stayed there because the system goes on, right?
Yeah, I've been there.
So I find that this works for me, but may not work for someone else. But what worked for me was that I continue to live my life. So as you mentioned earlier, I'm also working at GitLab. So I can pay my bills. I don't have a rush, you know, because if you're a solo founder and then you quit everything and then you go the solo founder way and then you work 100% on your startup, it may be a bit frustrating to pay your bills and then you have more stress and then you tend to burn out faster. I think I never went through this because I managed to balance my life and my side project, let's put it that way. So it worked quite well for me. And for sometimes I lacked motivation, but now that we're two founders, when I'm down, he's kind of chilling me up. And then when he's down, I'm doing the same for him. So it's a very good balance.
That's really interesting. I think, you know, from my own experience, I find it challenging. I find it really challenging to balance sort of the day job with doing it on the side. Like you've mentioned, it's also super challenging if, like, I've done it where I just quit everything and work on that as a solo founder. And that's also like super stressful, you know, because like then you're depending on it. How do you manage to balance them? Because like for me, it would be like my brain is like in, you know, work, you know, like if I was working at GitLab, I feel like my brain would just be focused on all the issues there. And it'd be hard for me to switch to working on something else and get into that mode. I don't know. Do you have that experience?
Not really. Because since my childhood, the way we were grown up, we were educated. Yeah. And in Turkey, it's a bit, you have to be multitasking because you go through a very harsh education system and you have to focus on a lot of things simultaneously. So you learn multitasking, multitasking. Yeah. So I don't have this problem, mainly also because when I first joined GitLab, I mentioned that I was working on StormKit. And that's actually, I think that's why they invited me to the interview. They liked what I built with StormKit. At least that's what my manager told me after they hired me. And we had a contract with them. We signed a contract with them that I can continue to work on StormKit. And GitLab is very flexible in terms of work. So we don't have fixed hours. We don't have to work from a fixed location. It's an all remote async company. Which I love. Yeah. And we also brought this culture to StormKit with my with John. We're working remotely and we're acing. We actually met a couple of weeks ago for the first time after 2 years.
Awesome.
In real life. And so once you have this flexibility, I think you can manage your time pretty easily.
Yeah. So it sounds like you've tried to take the approach of structuring your life to enable you to have a nice balance. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. So far, my goal was always to give me more freedom to work from wherever I want, whenever I want. And this is why I didn't also burn out with StormKit or with any other job. And it's just, works.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So if you're sort of looking at, you've got this going, right, for a few years now, and you've got this balance figured out, where do you go from here? Like, do you look at, say, the web world and you're like, okay, in 10 years, AI is going to be writing all the code and I'm just going to be, you know, orchestrating it from above and it's all going to run on StormKit. So we need to add these features to StormKit. Like, I know I'm just making that all up, of course, but like, how do you go about that? Like figuring out the future basically of StormKit?
That's a pretty good question. It's hard to anticipate, because a few years ago, serverless was like, it was not quite popular, right? When it first came into the market, so people didn't really see a use case for it. But then after a few years, companies like Vercel, Netlify, they brought a serverless into their core. And serverless became something. So exactly. So it was quite impossible to anticipate that. I think I jumped to the serverless train right on time, because I also see, like, if there are bigger companies like these in the market, it means that the market is justified. It's validated, and they also open the way for you, because users who are not able to get what they want from these companies start to look for alternatives. Mm-hmm. And if you're there, they start to come to you. This is our case, for instance, in the last couple of years, once we started to switch to flexibility. But in terms of future, think serverless. I was expecting it, like, once it started to take off, I would have expected that it would have been in a better position. So, for instance, today you're still not able to do some stuff on serverless. Like, for instance, you're not able to do you're not able to run sockets, for instance. Like, if you have a Node.js server and you want to send messages, like push messages, you cannot do that with serverless environment. You have to have a third-party service. So I would have expected these technologies to come into the serverless world, but they're still not integrated. So there's still a long way for serverless to go. And I think so. We will stick with the serverless part and just go with the flow a bit.
Yeah. Do you have like a roadmap of like features you'd like to have, or some sort of grand vision for StormKit? Is that like, I'm just curious, like, what is driving it forward, or is it purely just, you know, you get feedback from people and that's it?
My biggest personal goal is to bring to make StormKit a self-hosted product.
Ah, okay.
So that has been in my mind for a few years, and then once the customer approached us, and they have a pretty valid reason, by the way, to use self-hosted. They're using Netlify today.
Yeah.
They were using Netlify, and since Netlify doesn't have servers in their region, and StormKit cannot have as well because we're on AWS. They wanted to have a self-hosted version because of their regulation system. They have to have their service in the local region. So this is one of my biggest goals with StormKit, to make it self-hosted. John is working on a service called Redis HTTP. So we're going to integrate Redis, and it's going to run over HTTP. So this is currently a beta version, or not even beta, maybe. So we're still working on it, but it's already usable. So I think these two features, they're in our roadmap for now.
And it's also, and those things also sound like differentiators too, because, you know, Netlify and Vercel and stuff are probably not looking at the self-hosted market, if we're being honest, right?
That's my understanding as well.
Yeah. So is that like something you consider when you're thinking about what features to implement? Do you think about that or not? Do you find it's not really that relevant? Like what your competitors are doing, basically.
So I kind of stopped looking at what they're doing because even if they're not doing something, it doesn't mean that they won't do it. I mean, at the beginning, I was always introducing new features, but then after a few months, I saw the same feature in other providers as well. So they have, first of all, they have more person power, right? So they have more employees, so they can build features faster. And that also depends because there's also bureaucracy in it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know. Yes, they do theoretically have the ability to build more. Yeah,
exactly. So if they put something in their mind, probably they're gonna be faster. Yeah. And we're never gonna compete with them in terms of feature. So we have to provide something else. And this flexibility, I think it's something that's gonna work. For instance, there was another not customer this time. It's a headless CMS that looks into integrating a service like StormKit into their own CMS. They have big companies, so the customers wanted to have the CMS part, but plus the front end deployment as well, and they didn't want to use separate services for this. So they reached out to us, and it's still an ongoing process. If it works, it's going to be pretty cool that we can collaborate with them. They can use StormKit internally. So we provide this flexibility, and so far it seems like it's working. I mean, we received good feedback.
Yeah, I could say I would love. So I self-host things.
And, yeah,
and that's mainly because at this point, so many services that I set things up on have gone away or changed their terms or changed their focus that I'm like, I just want to have something set up and just have it run and not have to worry about that. So like, actually I self-hosted my email until very recently.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I was like, oh, I started on whatever, you know, Yahoo Mail, and then that sucked, and then switched to Gmail, and then the interface was too slow, and blah, blah, blah. And so I'm like, I'm sick of always changing. And same with like hosting my websites. I'm like, I just want it to run. Like, I don't want to have to tinker with it every like 2 years with some companies like, oh, I'm shutting down, or we got acquired, or whatever, you know. Like having that control myself is, I don't know, I find it just saves me time in the long run.
You know, we actually have the same feeling for JavaScript. Every other day there is a new framework.
Yes.
And then every other day the existing frameworks have a different major version, which has a lot of breaking changes. So you have to keep up with them. And it's super. That's actually why I prefer not to use frameworks. And I came up with this, like I created a monorepo template. It's basically using Wit, the bundler. And it's basically a configuration which has server-side rendering, pre-rendering, or API enabled. So you just build your website the way you want. You don't have to depend on frameworks. And it just works. And I'm using this internally. We're doing a lot of dogfooding. Some products, for instance, that we launched, we use the monorepo template. And we also transformed StormKit's website, the landing page and the app, into this monorepo template. And I'm pretty happy about it because I have the control. It doesn't...
Yeah.
There are not breaking changes every other day. So I totally get what you mean.
Yeah. And it's actually that like not using frameworks is also a big part of it too. Like, and this is what I tell people, like, and I don't know, I'm curious if you agree, but like I'll say frameworks can be fantastic for starting something really quickly, but they can also be a horrible nightmare after that. Like, not only do they change, but the world changes around them and your product changes and maybe the framework doesn't support your use case. So I am definitely always been for, I don't know, a long time now, an advocate of libraries over frameworks, like something that lets me have control. And that's like, you know, if we want to really get into the nitty gritty, you know, like I think in terms of like React in general and the React ecosystem, I feel a little bit less happy about it, I think, than I did initially, because it, you know, it's sort of fused with like Next.js and stuff, which are very framework like. I don't know if you have like sort of a similar experience, but like I find it a bit frustrating.
it's the same experience for me. For this is actually why we had to drop support for Next.js, because we were not able to cope up with their changes. And they are also, so they have a very cool framework, that's right. And they have also a very cool product. Vercel is very, very, very nice. And, but since they own both, they have...
Yes, that's what I was... I was getting at, yeah.
they're taking advantage of this, and which makes complete sense. But then it's for us, for instance, it's super hard to develop features around it.
Yeah, whereas it seems like you're focused more on kind of like enabling people to run something that's less dependent on the platform. And whereas Vercel and Next.js and they're similar products and similar companies, that they seem to kind of be developing these two things in tandem, so they're kind of tied together in the end.
Exactly.
And I mean, it can work for you at some point, but it's also, I don't know, I find you get kind of trapped in it, which I hate.
That's one thing you sacrifice when you use frameworks like this, because you're going to be vendor locked in after a while. And then, as you said, if you have a custom requirement, something that is out of the general use case, then it's going to be a nightmare.
Yes. I'm like tempted to just like start ranting at it. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm really excited to have projects like StormKit that don't force me, you know, down that path. I feel like I imagine it's hard though from your standpoint, because like when you, there's this tendency to feel like you're competing against a giant, you know, like they have all the money and they have all the marketing and they have all of this, you know? How do you handle that as somebody who doesn't? And we've talked about that a lot, you know, the focus on like, we aren't them, but we can, you know, take advantage of that and provide things those companies can't provide. So I think that's really awesome. And really encouraging to me, at least. I'm definitely hoping for StormKit to enable me to use it for some of my own things.
I have, a friend of mine, he sold his startup for a few hundred million dollars. And
I want a friend like that.
Yeah. And he once told me that their product was not the first in the market. And I also believe in this. So if you have a product that is the second or the third in the market, it means that you have more chance to be acquired by someone else who wants to get into the market, because they're not going to go for the first one because it's going to be super expensive. So if you're a second or third one, you have more chance to be acquired. And that was their experience. I mean, he's living a great life right now. I guess he was right.
Donating some to StormKit, I hope. So that does make me wonder, you know, like if I don't know what your plans are for StormKit. And I kind of haven't, I know maybe what your answer is here, and that's why I'm asking it. But what would happen if StormKit gets acquired and I have stuff running on there? Have you taken steps towards enabling people to And let's say somebody acquires it and decides to do something else with it, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Have you taken steps to sort of mitigate that risk?
So our approach so far, so we didn't want to go the VC way. I had a few sessions with VCs, but it's a completely different path. And I don't want to go that path. I like to stay bootstrapped. But if one day a bigger company comes and then wants to acquire StormKit, I think I cannot say exactly what I'm going to say, but my feeling right now is that I like what I'm doing with StormKit. And I like to keep on doing that, even if it gets acquired. So have the same vision, have the same passion.
You've also open sourced some of it. Is that right?
Yes. We open sourced some of it, and also like the deployment part. But we didn't open source the backend because we were not. Mm-hmm. So because it's a big decision. Once you open source something, it's hard to go back. And we didn't feel ready to open source the backend as well. But maybe in the future. I'm not against it. I love the open source world. I work for an open source company. So
yeah. So have you considered like a open core type model, or
that was the idea. That was the idea. But then we started to focus on something else, because the idea is that, so the impression is that once you open source something, it's going to take off. But it's not the case. it's not the case.
Well, your workload will take off.
That's right. So I think we're right now we're not feeling ready to open source it completely. We're focusing more on these customers that want custom features. And but one day,
I believe you've also said though, if there was probably interest or support for it, you'd consider it as well. Is that right?
Yes. So we're completely fine also with, as said, we're very flexible. And if we have a good connection with the person, we're open to pretty much anything.
Yeah, that's so cool. I think that's definitely one of the big advantages to working with a smaller player.
Exactly.
And so that's awesome. So at this point in your development of StormKit, are there like different challenges than when you first started? And I think you've already talked about this a little bit, but maybe let's get into, say, growth and in marketing type of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that changes over time. Has your approach to it changed, like, since you started?
Yes. So far, it was me trying to do marketing and sales, and I'm not good at it, I'm going to admit. But recently, John became our CMO. That's how we call him now. And he started to look into this. And we mm-hmm. find that this works pretty well, because when I'm doing marketing, I'm always staying in my comfort zone, or sales. And but his comfort zone is not the same with my comfort zone. And then when he's doing something, I usually end up implementing it. Like, for instance, so in this case, for instance, like, he reached out to you, right? And and then he started to communicate. But then I'm doing the podcast. This is a very good balance between us, because he's initiating stuff and then I'm continuing it. If I were doing the initial part, I would probably stay in my comfort zone and then pick... it's harder to go on like this. And then we find this to be pretty effective. He started to write articles as well. He's pretty good at it. And then he started to push me more to do to also write articles, or to appear in the podcast, for instance. This was always it's out of my comfort zone. It's very nice to be here, but it's also a bit stressful, because it's, you don't know how it's going to go, right? If you're not used to it.
You're not as familiar with it. You know?
Exactly.
You're not like me doing it every week.
Exactly. So I think it's good. Like, he's pushing me, I'm pushing him. It's a very good balance.
Yeah. So is that like, was that intentional? Like when you were looking for a co-founder, was it a sort of, hey, I feel like I'm not as good at this, I'd like to find somebody that's better at it?
No, I was not looking for a co-founder at that time. Mm-hmm. So we know each other from GitLab. We work at GitLab. Okay. And then he quit GitLab. He started to work elsewhere. And when we were working together, I mentioned that I was doing a side project called StormKit. He had a look into it. And then after he quit, he started to, without even consulting, there were some open issues. And then he started to pick them up, implement some stuff. And then we worked like that for a few months. And we realized that we loved working with each other, and then he loved the product. So that was a good match. And then I offered him, so we did an equal split. We said like 50-50, and that's how we became co-founder, and it worked pretty well.
Okay, so it wasn't necessarily intentional in terms of some sort of strategy. It was more based on the person and how you guys fit together. Is that right?
This is right. I think it's a pretty good strategy. He also wanted just to work on something. So if you're looking for a co-founder, this is something that I can share, because it's been our experience. I think the best way to understand if it's going to work or not is to see if they are interested in the product. So for instance, there is an analytics tool called Plausible. They had the same experience. So
yes, I've used it. Yeah,
you use it. So I had a call with Uku as well. We had a nice chat, and then he mentioned how he met his co-founder. His co-founder, without even letting him know, he wrote an article on Plausible and then published on Hacker News, and it took off. And then he said, hey, Uku, I published this article. And then they started to kind of have a couple of months of trial. And then they saw that they were working pretty well together, and they became co-founders. It's the same experience for us. Like John saw StormKit. Mm-hmm. He started to contribute to it without me asking for something. And then without him asking for any like co-found, like any partnership, I offered them because I saw that he was interested, and we worked quite well together. So it's a pretty good way to become a co-founder.
Yeah, I think there's like, I think there's a lot of people out there that are like doing the solo founder thing, and they're like, I wish I had a co-founder. And there's like, it's one of those things that I guess in my experience, it's hard to force to happen in that type of thing. Like you can go and hang out with people, but like, I don't know. It's one of those things that I don't know if you have any more thoughts on this, because I actually don't know the answer, but like, I'm like, I feel like the organic approach, like it sounds like you're describing, where it sort of develops, is kind of the ideal versus, you know, sort of like the dating approach, you know? And like when I've tried that, I found it to be very challenging. Like it's not really based on us working well together. It ends up being based on us just wanting to make something work. And later on, you find out you don't work that well together or something. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that dynamic.
That's a pretty good observation. So far, my experience has been exactly the same you described. I wanted to have a co-founder for a long time because it's hard to be a solo founder, especially the motivation part. And I tried the YC online summer school thing. And then I found a co-founder there. The experience was not very well. Then I offered being a co-founder to a friend of mine. It didn't work well. But then there has been John, who developed, like the relationship developed organically. And we understood afterwards, like after like a couple of months, we understood that this is going to work. And it's been almost 2 years, a year and a half that we are working together. And even if StormKit, like we decide to work on something else, like we always say, hey, we want to work together because we are a pretty good team.
That's awesome.
I'm gonna share the same with, like, from my personal private life. Like, it has been the same with my girlfriend. Like, both of us, we didn't want a relationship, but then the more time we spent, we realized that the more time we want to spend together, and we've been together for almost 3 years now. So
yeah,
it developed organically.
That's awesome. I guess maybe the takeaway can be, maybe what you need to do is put yourself out there in terms of getting to know people and building relationships above trying to get a co-founder. Does that sound right?
That sounds right. And I'm going to add to this. Sometimes people quit pretty early. So because like, if you think about it, for StormKid, it's been almost 5 years, and it's still not in a position where we can go both full time and then completely depend on StormKid. But even in the worst day, I always believed in the idea and just wanted, like, there was this instinct inside of me which said,
"Yeah,
just keep on going, just keep on going, just keep on going." And then I listened to it, and I'm pretty happy that I did, because I love what I'm doing. I love working together with my co-founder, and we also deliver a pretty good quality product. We are happy about it. We love it. We're still passionate. So it's just keep on.
Yeah, just keep on doing it. I've found that's my experience too. Like, what seems to be really interesting is the longer something goes, the more, like, I think of it as like inherent momentum. It just builds, like, without you even really needing to do anything, just purely the fact that it keeps going. Like, I think it's, my theory is it's a number of things. One, it's a signal to people that you're serious about it, right? And so, you know, they go look for something and they're like, oh, this has been going for 4 years. It's probably going to keep going.
Exactly. You know,
versus like, hey, this has been going for 3 months. Is it going to be around in 3 months? Who knows, right?
Exactly, exactly. And plus, so for instance, the article that I shared, so one of the partnership that I mentioned before, the headless CMS partnership that I mentioned before, so they found the article that I wrote, I think, in January, March. So
yeah.
So when you publish something, you expect immediate return, but just wait for it. I mean, if you believe in your product, if you believe that it's going to make, it's a useful product, just keep on doing.
Yeah. I think that's really critical, but also can be extremely challenging. Cause, like, in my experience, especially if you jump into it more and you don't necessarily have, like, another job on the side to sort of fund yourself in the meantime, that can be really hard because you're like, oh, I'm going to be out of money by this point. Like, I have to. And so maybe another aspect of it is trying to put yourself in a position where you can keep going for a long time and see returns on these sort of longer term bets you're making.
Yes. Yes. I tried to do the second approach, and so far it worked for me. Then I've been also on the first approach side, in the past. I was completely dependent on, I didn't mention this, but I had a second startup initiative, before StormKid, and I was completely depending on it. I was living on a low salary, and, I burned out after 6 months. It just didn't work. But right now it's a long process. I never burned out. When I need to take time off, I take time off. When I need to focus, I focus. So it just works.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a lot in understanding yourself and your own needs. Because, like, I've heard other people that are like, oh, I've learned I have to go all in, or I don't push myself enough to actually launch things. And they found that works for them. I'm probably a lot more on your side, where I found that that level of stress burns me out, you know. But it, you know, that's like something I've had to learn too, and learn how to listen to my own body and what it's telling me about what I can do and that type of thing. And maybe this goes back to earlier in our conversation where you don't necessarily know until you try things as well, right?
Yes.
Like, it sounds like that's part of been your journey as well. It's like you had to learn that about yourself.
Exactly. So it took me two startups to learn my pace and understand my requirements, my needs. So now I'm just listening to them. So that's actually what matters. It's because as I said before, what works for me may not work for you, or the other way around.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
what
exactly.
What actually works is your needs. If you listen to your needs and you find a good balance, I think it's going to work.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's a great place to sort of tie things up here. And I just want to thank you again, Savash, for being on the show. It's been a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the conversation. And
thanks,
you know, talking about the 56K modem and everything in between.
Exactly.
Yeah, so thank you for coming on and sharing your experiences with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me here.
And yeah, best of luck with StormKit. I like it. I'm very excited for it and for the future. And I can't wait to see what you do with it.
Thanks a lot.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. And thank you all for joining us. Yeah, see you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.